Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we call it, real debate without the hate. I'm Cliff Dunn, a Republican from Newport News, Virginia.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, still technically a Democrat living in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, the liberal Democrat for as long as they let me, from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia, and I am your conservative Democrat for the evening.
Mind-blowing. The More Perfect Union podcast is now the number 12 most popular news and politics podcast in the nation. A More Perfect Union can be found on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. So, gentlemen, 24 hours ago, maybe a little bit less, we all stayed up to watch history being either made or exploded.
Unmade.
I don't know which. But it is now the era of Trump. What are your thoughts on how the election went down and what's coming from here?
It was by far the biggest political upset ever. I mean, DJ would probably have a better... He knows these things more than I do. I mean, unless there was a dog catcher's race in Birmingham, New Jersey, that he'll quote, I'm pretty sure. But it was. It was the biggest upset. And I was up until 2:30 thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to happen. And it happened. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of, you know, I had every member of my family call me and say, you're going to fix this, right? You have a podcast. You have some control over this. But
let me ask this. First of all, let's acknowledge that that Cliff, you and Emily voted for the gentleman who won. So congratulations to you.
Who knows? Well done.
Before we go into our emotional turbulence, tell us how you're feeling as somebody who's on the victorious side.
I'm thrilled. I actually was, when they called Wisconsin, I was on the phone with a friend of mine who I've talked politics with basically since I was 16. And he said that in all those years of discussions, he has never heard me get so emotional as when they called Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an amazing feeling. I've never felt this way before, where I don't entirely know where we're going, but I'm excited about it for the first time.
Talk just a little bit more about what excited you about that. Was it that you were going to see policies that you believe in come to fruition? Was it about the man himself? I mean, what was it that you were feeling that you were proud of?
You know, it's policies. It's that we have somebody who I believe we're going to get some good, what I would consider to be good Supreme Court appointments out of him. But we're also going to see much needed investment in infrastructure. That's been a big thing for me. We have a candidate who is at least willing to embrace the big ideas from our side, which is something that I think has really been missing in the time I've been politically active.
Okay, and Greg, from the other perspective, what were you feeling last night, other than nausea?
Nausea was the big one. I mean, disbelief. It's frightening. Where Cliff is excited about this unknown, I am terrified of the concept of bull in a china shop. I was talking to a Republican today, and she said, we might have lost, we might have won. I don't know, but it's something different.
And you know, by the way, when we said that about Obamacare, they lambasted us for it.
right, exactly. We wanted something. It's frightening. The worst part of my day, though, I will have to say, was I had to tell my two daughters, 1 7 and 1 10, and there were tears, huge tears. But then they gave me a Kleenex, and they said, you'll be okay, Dad.
Yeah, I had to have the conversation with my 15-year-old daughter this morning, and there weren't tears, but there was a lot of confusion and a lot of anger, frankly.
Yeah.
And I think that conversation is happening all over the country, and it's a very difficult conversation to have.
I can attest to that. I have not yet spoken to my son on the matter. He lives with his mother. But my wife is very bewildered. She's very confused. She is, and frankly, I get the impression she's not sure what country she woke up in. And I have been trying to reassure her for a number of reasons. A couple of things that we need to remember as we move forward. Number one, 52% of America voted for somebody else. More Americans voted for her than for him. He had his voters in the right places, so he wins. You know, he won the electoral votes. But this was not a mandate of the American people. This was the mandate of cartographers long since dead who drew 47.5% of the voters into the particular states that gave Trump the electoral votes he needs to win. Nothing wrong with that. That's the rules, and I'm good with the rules.
Right.
Donald Trump won fair and square. But a mandate, this is not.
Right. Mitch McConnell even said that today, earlier. He was like, we have the power now, but this isn't power forever. And the people didn't give us a mandate on this one. So we have to be really careful with what we're going to do with the power that we have right now. So
interesting to hear that from Mitch McConnell. I thought he would have gone the other way.
But let's be honest here. Until the numbers started, until maybe about 18 hours ago, Mitch McConnell figured he would be Senate Minority Leader and steamrolled by a Clinton administration and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. The fact that he has any power today is probably a complete shock to him.
Yeah.
So he's probably a little more humble because he's figuring, oh my, I'm actually going to get stuff passed in this chamber. What the hell am I going to do now?
He's talking like Lindsey Graham all of a sudden.
DJ, I did want to give you credit where it's due. You did get the electoral margin right, and you got the fact that we would know on election night. You just got the wrong candidate.
Actually, the best summation of what happened last night is just take a look at every single prediction I have made for the last 6 months and go 180 degrees, and you got it right.
Which Cliff called it on Sunday when he thanked you for going with Hillary. So,
yeah. I went 0 for 5.
So, DJ, let me ask you, right before the election, you had this change of heart. You decided to vote for Hillary, even though you've been a Republican and then a neoconservative after that. What were you feeling last night?
I was surprised because I did not think that she would lose. I thought she would win. Frankly, as a 40-odd-year-old white guy, it's a little easier for me to be not so emotional because, you know, Donald Trump didn't necessarily beat the hell out of me as a demographic for multiple months on end. So the fear and the confusion and the anger that so many other people are feeling, people of color, women, maybe folks in the LGBT community, etc. You know, as a straight white guy, that was not something I had to worry about. So my mind was able to just kick the gears and get moving. And I looked and I said to myself, the American Republic is going to need an effective opposition as Donald Trump transforms the Republican Party into what is essentially a populist blob in his own image. The Democrats are going to feel the impulse to move leftward as they did after Nixon's first win, as they kind of did after Reagan's first win, although not as much as they were accused of doing, and as Labor did after 1979 and after 2010 and after 2015. The problem is that's not the way the Democrats are going to win in 2020. I think what the Democrats need to do is instead of looking to where the blue firewall fell, because those votes are not coming back. Donald Trump will make sure those votes aren't coming back. And if my social media feed is any indication, most Democrats don't actually want those voters back. The path for the victory...
We're pretty pissed off about that.
Yeah. The path for victory for the Democrats, I realized, is actually going to be in the Sun Belt. It's going to be in places that have more dynamic economies, that have greater contact with the outside world, and recognize the interdependence on the outside world. Places like North Carolina, which Trump carried, but he carried narrowly. Places like Florida, which admittedly Trump carried, but he carried very narrowly. Places like Georgia, which Trump carried narrowly. And in fact, Trump was a little below what Romney had in 2012. Places like Texas, where Mrs. Clinton cut the Republican margin in half. Places like Arizona, where Mrs. Clinton ate into what was Romney's, I think, 8-point advantage in 2012. Those are the places where Democrats can build, because those are the places where Democrats can find voters who recognize that we are in the 21st century and are able to accept that. But that will mean that the Democrats...
Wait, do you mean young voters?
I mean young voters, middle-aged voters, voters who are voters of color, voters who are white. I mean, just voters across the demographic spectrums. You're going to have a much better chance winning voters in those states than in, say, Ohio, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin, where, frankly, they want to bring us all back, take us all back to 1964. So what I realized was the Democrats are going to need discipline. the Democrats are going to have to resist the temptation to veer off leftward and chase Jill Stein and Bernie Sanders voters, which really wouldn't help them this time anyway. And they're going to have to find a way to accommodate and build up a conservative wing within the party. And I realize the only way that I can the whatever small piece I can do to make that happen is to actually be a feather in the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. So I decided, you know, I took the plunge and I said, okay, I will be a conservative Democrat. And I know Cliff is probably thinking to himself, ha 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 ha. Now he's their problem. Because because as any Virginia Republican will tell you, I drove them crazy for the time that I was active in the Republican Party of Virginia. And now that I'm going to be active in the Democratic Party of Virginia, I will probably annoy them just as much. But I really think this is important. The Democratic Party needs to keep an open door to Atlanticists, folks who are concerned about our NATO allies. That won't be so hard because I think the Dems are really afraid of the Russian hack now. They need to keep an open door to neoconservatives who believe that America best defends its interests when we support country self-determination and the ability of the people within those countries to choose their own leaders. And they need to keep a door open to economic conservatives that they've railed against for 80 years.
First of all,
well, I am super excited about you becoming a Democrat. I'll be over this next weekend to convert your car to vegetable oil.
do we get to haze him, Greg? I mean,
Oh yeah. You'll get the tattoo.
There's got to be like a 6 or 8 week hazing process.
Oh yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
They can memorize the little red book.
There actually is a little red song book, but that's another. We'll sing songs. And
I love how he's now about 8 minutes into our party, and he's already telling us what to do.
I am merely offering advice as to what I think would help us. I am not expecting the Democratic Party to go, oh, DJ, thanks. We're going to agree with you on absolutely everything. That's not the way any political party works. I get that. Okay.
Well, I'll tell
you. I am just basically, you know, that's not what I'm talking
about
here. Okay. I'm just saying there are opportunities for the party to grow, and I want to help the party grow in those areas.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, DJ, I'd like to prognosticate here. Your answer is ultimately going to be what makes the Democrats win out. But it's going to take about 4 to 6 years for them to come around to that. I think they will probably around the 2022-2024 timeline. But if history is any guess, you know, the shall we say, farce of it repeating will occur. The left will have to take their stab. You know, you're going to get something McGovern-esque or Mondale-esque or, God help you, Michael Foote-esque in 2020 is my feeling.
Okay. You know, I think actually you're right, Cliff, because my instinct is to go left. I actually disagreed with DJ's analysis, although when you lay it out, I understand what you're saying, DJ. But when we look at what went wrong this time around, there's going to be a lot of soul-searching in the Democratic Party, and there's going to be a lot of different factions that are going to be battling with each other. I come from the faction that, while I think that the Bernie Sanders crowd, the Bernie or bust people, the Bernie bros, I think that they basically kneecapped her in the primaries, making it so difficult for her that she couldn't win a general election. But I do think that Mrs. Clinton made a couple of strategic mistakes, and one was in trying to be that that just left of center or maybe even right of center Democrat, and not going more populist. I said at the time, and you'll recall this, and I stand by it, that while Tim Kaine did help deliver Virginia, which was good, I think ultimately I have to second-guess the choice of Tim Kaine. She should have gone with either Bernie Sanders, as much as I know they did not like each other personally, or Elizabeth Warren to unite the party, to bring the progressive wing back into the fold, to bring millennials back into the fold. And by my early reading of the demographics of this election, from what I understand so far, that's where she lost the election. It was millennials not showing up. It was the Latino vote not being as strong as we had hoped, although they turned out in mass numbers, but not necessarily giving Democrats as many votes as we would have liked. It was the black vote, again, not turning out in as large a numbers as we would have liked. But I think that left wing, you know, those people that voted, even if it was, you know, 1% or even less than 1% for Jill Stein, In many states, that would have been the margin. Now, not every one of those Jill Stein votes would have gone to Hillary, and we can make the same argument about the 2 to 3% that Gary Johnson got, and a lot of those might have gone to Trump. But I think a lot of votes on the left were lost because of the primary fracas, and I think if we're going to mend that, the next candidate has to be a little bit more left of center than she was.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree. I don't think anyone natured this one. I think we had a large conservative turnout, and it was backlash against 8 years of a progressive president. And you know, and I'm just going to call it, and you know, because we're now in this era of telling it like it is, because we can now do that. You know, which is that's what we like.
Let's
now.
Get down with each other. Let's be real.
Let's get down. I'm going to tell it like it is. We had a black president, and he was progressive, and I think it scared a lot of people. Well, what about me? What about my whiteness? What about me? And I think it brought out a lot of middle class white, not college educated voters who were like, wait. I'm not being represented. I see a lot of changes. Changes are scary. I see the LGBTQ community being represented, but not me. And all of a sudden, this majority of whites were all of a sudden thinking that they were a minority. And all of a sudden, the majority thought, it's not very cool being a minority, is it? We should vote en bloc again and bring back 1964.
So what do you think the solution is for the Democratic Party going forward?
Oh, the solution? Booker, Corey.
So you see going a little bit more left of than we did this time? Maybe more populist?
He's not that much
yeah,
more left.
Yeah, I was going to say Cory Booker he's not known as a left of center Dem.
No, not at
he
all.
He has talked some on education reform. I would challenge the notion, however, whether in terms of the notion that Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders would have been better about it. If you look at the numbers and look at the exit polling, Donald Trump actually did better among Hispanic voters than Mitt Romney did. He did better among Asian American voters than Mitt Romney did. I don't see Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren fixing those particular problems. I think Greg does make a certain point that in the Rust Belt part of the country, voters who back in, say, when we were younger, Kevin would call them, and Greg would call themselves Irish Americans, Italian Americans, Polish Americans, German Americans, etc., saw themselves more as white Americans and acted accordingly. I don't know how much of an impact that had in the South, which is why I think in those southern states I talked about, Clinton did better than up north. And in fact, Hillary Clinton did better in North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida than she did in Ohio. That tells us where the future of the Democratic Party is. It ain't the Midwest anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying that. I'm sorry. I'm just not sure that I agree. I think that this was a one-off.
Kevin, numbers are numbers.
No, but I think this was a one-off.
Yeah, you know what? Hillary's unpopularity could be a one-off. She could be that one candidate, and Trump could be that one candidate that could just screw up all the numbers for all time. And we could say 2016 – doesn't count in the polls anymore, okay, or doesn't count in all our numbers because
Greg, the problem with that analysis is that Donald Trump cannot be a one-off because he will be the incumbent running for re-election in 2020.
He will be if he loses. He will be if he loses. Okay,
that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
So with that in mind,
let's talk a little bit about what's coming.
What's Trump's first 100 days? If of course he doesn't get impeached, fall down the stairs.
I'm looking at the official contract that he has signed with me as an American, because it says on the bottom he's got his signature there and it's got a space for mine. So I'm going to print it out and sign it, and now it's a real official contract. His contract with the American voters for the first 100 days. We've talked about this once before on the show. I'll just mention a couple of things. Cleaning up Washington, constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress. Yes or no, everybody? Will that get any traction?
You know, that's funny because Mitch McConnell, that was the first thing Mitch McConnell said was, Yeah, that's not even going to be brought up.
So that's a no.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, okay. It's going to get tabled and go nowhere.
Okay, hiring freeze on all federal employees.
So does that mean he's not going to hire a cabinet?
Yeah, so obviously that makes no sense. Third,
okay.
A requirement that for every new federal regulation, two existing regulations must be eliminated. That happens in Congress. That's not even an executive branch thing. Right.
Well, there are a lot of executive branch regulatory authorities, quasi-legislative agencies.
Okay.
Yeah, the executive branch can rescind its own regulator. What is going to happen though is he's going to pose a regulation that he loves and get rid of two regulations from 1934 that are completely outdated that nobody actually knew existed.
Okay.
And he'll use that to check the box.
Okay. Fourth, 5-year ban on White House and congressional officials becoming lobbyists after they leave government. Who here thinks that's really going to happen?
I do. Because he wants all his Wall Street buddies to be lobbyists, so it's more jobs for the boys.
It's
a very convenient way to lock out all of the Obama administration employees for a full term.
Congress is not going to vote to stop themselves from getting lobbying jobs. It's never going to happen.
Hang on. Step back. What was the exact phraseology in that clause?
A five-year ban on White House and congressional officials becoming lobbyists after they leave government service.
They can still be consultants, though, and that's the loophole.
Okay.
They'll figure something out on the Venn diagram on that one.
A lifetime ban on White House officials becoming lobbying on behalf of foreign governments. Okay, let's table that one. Who cares? Sixth.
Why would Trump need that? Putin can just dial him directly.
Right. Okay, I'm going to go on to some other action items here. Withdraw from NAFTA under Article 2205. Yes, he could do that, right?
Yeah,
it pains me to say this, but yes.
Okay.
However, if he does that, he puts Texas in play in 2020 if we're smart.
Okay. Announce withdrawal from Trans-Pacific Partnership. Obviously, he could do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sadly, yes.
Tell the Secretary of Treasury to label China a currency manipulator. Probably yes. DJ is the only one here who understands that. Yeah, he could probably do it.
I get it too.
Okay.
Yeah, that may actually be useful now because China is dropping its currency like a fly again.
Okay. As you can tell, I'm trying to fly through these. Not, no pun intended. Lift restrictions on the oil production industry, including shale, oil, natural gas, and kill roadblocks to the Keystone Pipeline and other energy infrastructure projects.
Yes.
Yeah, I assume he'll do all of that.
Can he do that?
Yeah, he can say whatever he can say. Remember when my predecessor said the Keystone Pipeline was a bad idea? I'm reversing that. He can do that.
Okay.
And if he can't do it personally, he can put somebody in the relevant agency to do it.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And cancel billions of dollars in payments to the UN climate change programs and use that money to fix America's water and environmental infrastructure. Again, I don't know whether he can do that or not. He probably can. I assume that somebody
he may need a bill.
That's one you need congressional rescission authority. That'll sail through the next Congress fairly easily.
I'm pretty sure Trump's pretty good at not paying bills. So
okay, I want to get through these.
I'm pretty sure he could do that.
Indeed.
Okay. Cancel all federal funding to sanctuary cities. I'm pretty confident that that's not doable.
Probably needs a bill.
Yeah, that's going to be one that goes into the ether.
And you go tell the senators from New York, Pennsylvania, California, and Florida, that their states are not getting any, or their major cities are not getting any federal funding.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Or the governors either.
And then there's a long list of this stuff. Obviously, I do think he will repeal the Affordable Care Act, which makes me very sad. Because I think we're going back to the Wild West of insurance companies owning the insurance industry.
No, whoa, she's sweet.
What?
Do you think he's going to replace it with something?
Okay, first of all.
I love getting a laugh, but I don't know what I said that was funny.
First of all, this is the way it's going to go. It's going to be goodbye Obamacare, hello Obamacare-like but renamed Trumpcare. Okay. There are a bunch of things in the patently deficient and unaffordably careless act that Republicans actually like or can't afford to drop. So what is going to happen is they're going to go, okay, we're going to repeal Obamacare and we're going to replace it with, and then if somebody's going to, you know, what you're replacing it with really looks a hell of a lot like actual Obamacare. And they'll hope nobody notices that sort of thing.
Well, I hope you're right, but if you get rid of the mandate and if you get rid of subsidies, I don't see how you could put together a program that still covers everyone and does not have pre-existing conditions.
What I suspect they're going to do is, instead of the mandate subsidies thing, they're simply going to say, we're going to allow individuals to have a tax credit for health insurance, and they'll find some way to do it so that you can use the tax credit immediately, kind of like withholding or something. I'm mixing my metaphors. But my point is, you can come up with some number that essentially creates the exact same incentives that the subsidies plus penalty for non-purchase is. And I have a feeling that when the number crunchers look at it, they'll go, well, you know, that tax credit you talked about pretty much will have consumers doing the exact same things that the subsidies and the penalties would have them doing under the incentives under this thing. It's really just a matter of renaming the subsidies as credits and maybe increasing them a little bit so that you get the same incentives as you would with the current subsidies plus the credits. They are not going to drop the pre-existing condition requirement that says you insurance companies have to cover the pre-existing. They're not going to get rid of that because it is too popular, and Donald Trump does not like being unpopular, so he's going to keep that. And what you're going to find is when it comes to actual number crunching, when it comes to the effect on individual Americans, Trump care will probably not be all that different from Obamacare, to be perfectly honest with you.
From your lips to God's ears. Anybody else have a thought on that before we move on?
I don't know. DJ's been wrong a lot lately. So, and every time he sounds more like, oh, this is definitely going to happen, all I know is to like not stand next to him. You know, and he says, when he says, oh, this is the spot that lightning's not going to strike, all I know is the other way.
Yeah, well. I think if you go, and I think the key is that if you go in and redress the quote unquote, the penalty as something else, it goes down a little bit better than the government is penalizing you. You know, it's almost
It sound more palatable.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we can continue talking about this, but there are anti-Trump protests that are happening all over the country, and I've got to get my battle gear on and get out into mine. So why don't say
– California right now is trying to get – there's a bill that California is trying to get a CalExit, I think it's called, to try to secede. California is trying to secede from America.
Okay.
Thank you, Trump.
We'll race Texas to that great conclusion, and we'll see who gets there first. So I want to thank everybody for listening to this special episode of A More Perfect Union. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook news feed so your friends can find us too. And if you enjoy political debates and would like to be a part of ours, please join us on our Facebook political discussion group page, Open Fire. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there too. Until next week, everybody, if there is a next week, goodbye.
Kevin, how many friends did you unfriend today? On Facebook.
Or who unfriended me.